This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
I said it on Twitter this morning, might as well say it here too, right? The stock market is an idiot. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today, the 23rd of April. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today, as we do every Friday, yes, with the week that was, the past 5 days in this economy. Here to help make sense of it all is Sudeep Reddy from Politico. Hey, Sudeep, how are you?
Doing well.
All right, so look, let's do this. And if Gina can join us, she will join us. And if not, not. I want to talk about why I said the stock market was an idiot. And I said that because yesterday, as you know, word came that the Biden administration wants to raise capital gains taxes by a lot, fairly to say. But the stock market had a little, not a freak out, but it dropped quite a bit. And I wonder if stock traders have ever heard of the United States Senate and the idea that this thing is going to go anywhere.
Yeah, you wonder whether stock traders have actually read anything over the last 18 months either, when President Biden had been proposing exactly what came out yesterday. And his proposal, we'll see when it comes out whether it actually will reflect what he said on the campaign trail. But stock traders need to learn what the Senate shredder looks like. It's a very different situation when legislation goes to the Senate. This is going to be a backroom negotiation. Chuck Schumer does not want extremely high capital gains tax rates for people in his state, at least so far out of whack with everyone else, because they've got high state tax rates as well. He's going to have to think about that in guiding the Senate through this. And there will be a lot of negotiation that changes what comes out the other side. But the stock market does weird things when it's at historically high levels, when people are already fretting about whether it's overvalued. And this was just the momentary trigger. There will be others to come.
This is also, though, kind of a larger conversation that the president has kicked off. And he did it, honestly, with the infrastructure plan and inserting the government back into this economy in a way it hasn't been in decades, I suppose. But it's the idea of, what do you tax? Do you tax investment and gains on those, or do you tax labor, which is, you know, people's salaries?
Yeah, the entire Biden economic agenda, at least what he's trying to inject into the economy, is turning into a pretty intense argument and debate about who should be who should get just a little bit of an extra tilt going forward. Yeah. The stock market is obviously delivering enormous gains for the wealthiest Americans, and now we need to see whether the balance of power might shift. The president has tried giving a lift to unions. It actually hasn't worked out all that well, as we've seen in a couple of cases. And so this is really going to be a debate about some core values that Biden is pushing forward. And I think we'll see at some point investors start to wonder, well, maybe actually some of these longer term benefits would be beneficial to my stock portfolio. rather than just panicking in the moment about what a tax rate looks like. And that's I think what the coming debate is going to look like for at least the next 3 or 4 months.
Yeah. So I think we did get Gina Smilek back online. Gina, are you there?
I am here.
Excellent. Good. So look, I was going through my list of questions that I wanted to pose to you two, and I came to that usual suspect of late, inflation. And then I said, you know what? I don't want to ask about inflation. What I want to ask about is whether or not it's time for us to stop talking about inflation. What do you think?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Well, then you come to the right place.
I think as a Fed reporter, I am somehow legally or morally obligated to say it is never the time to stop talking about inflation. That's our job. But in earnestness, I think that the conversation around inflation has really coalesced around sort of the people who matter to inflation, the people who are making the decisions, saying, we're not that worried. We're paying attention. You know, we think it could pick up. But at the same time, we don't want to let the boogeyman of inflation keep us from pursuing important policy priorities. And yeah. I think that that's kind of the zeitgeist of the moment. And I don't think that's going to change on a dime.
No, it's not going to change on a dime. But that's the reason, Gina, I asked the question, because it's going to be, you know, years before we know actually whether we get sustained inflation at a level that concerns the Fed. And while I don't expect that we should wait, you know, for years, I do wonder if maybe it's being overemphasized, I guess, is my question right now.
I think that it's important to have the conversation around inflation, because part of the reason that we cannot care about inflation is that people believe the Fed is credibly paying attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, if folks thought that the Fed was just going to totally, you know, fall asleep on the job here, you could see a world in which inflation expectations popped up. You know, when people expect more inflation, companies can get away with charging more, and you get a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I think the very fact that we're talking about it could actually, you know, kind of interestingly mm-hmm. be keeping it under control.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. So, Sudeep, I want to talk about an interview I had yesterday with Catherine Tai, the U.S. Trade Representative. There's only one. And one of the gists of the conversation, which was that the president is now trying to reengage the United States multilaterally after 4 years of, you know, America alone and America first. And she seems bound and determined that they're going to be able to do that. And I wonder what your take is, because it's an uphill climb.
It is an uphill climb, but it's actually really surprising to me and very interesting how after 3 months, less than 100 days, they've actually been able to pull off mm-hmm. Almost like a reconnect with the world that I thought would take longer. You're seeing in the Iran nuclear deal, most of the other countries are like, well, finally, like the U.S. is back at the table. We can get on with this, something we agreed to already. And they're moving forward. There obviously will be bumps there. But on this on the climate front, having a summit with 40 leaders, most of them were actually quite pleased to at least be talking about this issue in a cooperative way. Like there are obviously big questions about whether there will be real action that comes out of it that's mm-hmm. meaningful for the world in the long run. But to at least have everybody at the table together, recognizing that it is a shared enterprise that can have benefits for dealing with other problems, say a pandemic or mm-hmm. anything else, mm-hmm. Whatever the next pandemic style global issue is. So having them at least talking is, I think, a good thing. But whether they can actually act in concert, in unison, is really the big question that we have to keep asking ourselves.
Yeah. So, Gina, you know, the derivative question to you, what do you think? Can they act in concert? Are they going to be able to, you know, find some common ground, right? Because it's a global economy. We only kind of live in it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting question. And I think it's especially an interesting question, actually, sort of to Steve's point, when you think about things like climate. You know, I think we're seeing the White House reengage in a really big way. It's still the case that some U.S. interests are different from some global interests. And certainly yeah. we see that, you know, when we're talking about things like how central banks and financial regulators are overseeing the fossil fuel sector. I think you still see a lot of daylight between what the European regulators think and what the American regulators think. And so I think it's just going to be really interesting to watch how this plays out as we do reengage on these issues.
Fair enough. Gina Smilek at The New York Times with us after some technical difficulties. Sudeep Reddy, he's at Politico. Thanks, you two. Have a nice weekend.
Thanks. Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
All right, see you. Be good. On Wall Street yesterday, of course, as I said, higher capital gains taxes were terrible. Today, what? Me worry? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Thank you. Let us dip into real estate here for a minute, shall we? New homes sold quite a bit more briskly in March than they did in February. It is that let's time the move around summer and kids' schools and all that time of year, after all. The Census Bureau says sales of new single-family homes were up 20% February to March, pending the usual revisions, of course, and up more than 65% from the same time a year ago when everything fell off the table. One can only wonder, though, what things would look like if there were more houses for sale. Because we learned yesterday, sales of existing homes fell for sheer lack of supply. And as Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, the competition for a new house right now is so intense, buyers are starting to take some big risks to close the deal.
Rachel Mull lost her first bidding war in Silver Spring, Maryland, last December.
It turns out that there were 7 offers on it, and at least 3 of them had no contingencies.
Contingencies allow a buyer to renegotiate or even back out of a deal without losing their earnest money if, say, the house appraises for less than the sale price, or if the home inspection turns up toxic mold or faulty wiring. After losing out a few more times, Mull is about to make an offer on another house and waive those protections.
My understanding is that sellers are basically only accepting contracts if they have no contingencies. They want a guaranteed closing.
In perpetually tight markets like the San Francisco Bay Area, no contingency deals have been the norm for several years. But it's happening now, even in historically softer markets. Seth Task is with Berkshire Hathaway in the Cleveland area. He says, yeah, waiving the inspection is risky, and he would never advise it.
But when a seller says, we're only looking at offers with no inspection contingency, what are you going to do?
Broker Akil Hamid in Shaker Heights, Ohio, just beat out 15 other offers on behalf of a client by bidding $15,000 over asking, waiving the appraisal contingency, and agreeing not to request any repairs.
You got to get creative, you know, but from a liability perspective, it scares me. You know, I just don't want to see a lot of buyer remorse later.
Hamid also worries the practice perpetuates inequity by squeezing out home buyers who may not be able to afford to take as much risk. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
In sporting news today, well, it's actually sports marketing news, but it is a big deal. The most decorated gymnast in the world, Simone Biles, of course, come on, you knew that. She has left Nike, the biggest sportswear company in the world, and joined smaller women-focused Athleta, which is owned by The Gap. Nike has, as you know, been at the tippy top of the heap of sponsorships for athletes basically forever. So Biles leaving sends a whole lot of messages about what athletes and brands should expect from one another. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more on what this deal means.
When Simone Biles finishes a routine, it gets this kind of response.
Wow. That is why she is the greatest gymnast of all time.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Unreal.
But beyond the beam, Biles has also been outspoken about racism, women in sports, and the predatory abuse she and other athletes have experienced. At Athleta, Biles says she'll have a platform for her activism.
It was super important for me to align with a partner who supports me, not just as a gymnast or an athlete, but for the individual that I am and the change that I want to create.
That was Biles on Instagram, where she has a few million more followers than Athleta does. At Athleta, Biles will have her own line of performance wear. Liz Delia is a sports management professor at UMass Amherst. She says that Biles is the latest top athlete to leave Nike for a smaller brand.
You're given more authority and more potential to be creative in what you want that partnership to look like, as opposed to at a place like Nike, you might be seen as one of many.
And in an emailed statement, the company says they've always taken great pride in their leadership in supporting women in sport at all levels. Nike has faced criticism for how it's treated and compensated its women athletes and its women employees. Still says Wharton marketing professor Americus Reed, Nike's not going to hurt too much from losing Biles.
Every single time Nike has misstepped, they always bounce back because at the end of the day, they have a really, really, really strong, powerful brand.
Even so, he says, with this departure, the executives at Nike are probably making some internal adjustments. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I remember I was like, what the heck are you doing?
I know. So was I. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 227 points today, 0.6%. 34043 was the number there. The NASDAQ advanced 198 points, 1.4%, 14,016. The S&P 500 found 45 points, 1%. Ended things at 41.80. For the week, the 5 days gone by, the Dow down 0.4%, the NASDAQ off 0.2%, S&P 500 fell 0.1%. Erica was telling us about Simone Biles leaving Nike for Athleta, so let's see how the shares did today. Nike shares up 0.7%, Athleta owner Gap tacked on 2.3%. Hot Wheels and Barbies, people, Hot Wheels and Barbies, those oldies but goodies are still driving results for Mattel. Shares revved up 0.8% today after the toy maker reported record sales growth of 47% for the latest quarter. Also, real quick here, Johnson & Johnson shares up after hours after a CDC panel recommended resuming use of that vaccine. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The big international climate summit wrapped up at the White House today. The talking is the easy part, of course. Now comes the actual doing, the cutting of emissions and greening of economies. One of the big selling points that President Biden's been hitting on back since he was candidate Biden is that taking on climate change is going to create a whole lot of economic opportunity. And along with that opportunity, a whole lot of jobs. What kind of jobs, though? And for whom? Marketplace's Samantha Fields is on that story.
If the U.S. actually does what President Biden wants to do and spends billions or trillions of dollars on clean energy and infrastructure and tackling climate change, it will create millions of jobs across all sectors of the economy, says Robert Polin, an economics professor at UMass Amherst.
The largest proportion of jobs are in construction, electricians, roofers, plumbers, pipe fitters, a lot of manufacturing jobs.
Many in clean energy, including wind and solar. But Jason Walsh at the Blue-Green Alliance says a lot of those new jobs are not being created in the same places where oil and coal and natural gas jobs are being lost.
A solar job being created in California does not replace a coal economy job in eastern Kentucky. So we have to be very intentional and targeted about pushing investment into the communities that have been on the hurting end of this energy transition.
That means going beyond job retraining programs, which often haven't worked that well, Polin says.
It includes 100% pension guarantees. It includes reemployment guarantees, a guaranteed job, and the job has to pay the level that the current job pays.
In East Kentucky, coal mining jobs are the highest paying ones around, but they've been dwindling for years, says Peter Hilly of the nonprofit Mountain Association.
We had a mono economy here for more than 100 years, and resource extraction economies drain a place. And the question is, how do we create a more diverse economy so that when anybody loses a job, they've got multiple options?
So there isn't just one industry in the community, he says, that so many people are relying on. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
So there you are, Monday morning, wondering what's going on in business and economics. Might I recommend the Marketplace Morning Report? Check it out. There are, according to the World Federation of Direct Selling Associations, which is a group 16 million people in this economy who are involved with what are known as multi-level marketing companies. Maybe they're selling weight loss supplements or wine glass sets or acne cream or leggings. They get you to buy in at one point, and then eventually they also offer you a life-changing opportunity to also sell the product. And the clear implication is cash in on the American dream. But the odds of making that big money are really, really small. From our podcast, This is Uncomfortable, host Rima Kreis has this story of how getting to the top of the MLM pyramid comes with its own costs.
Kiara Aceves had just graduated high school and had no idea what to do with her life. While her friends went off to college, she got a job at a gym and started focusing on losing weight. One day after a workout, she was scrolling through Twitter when she saw a video of a woman sharing her own weight loss journey.
And I remember reaching out to her and I was like, what the heck are you doing? What is this? Like, what routine are you following?
The woman told Kiara that she'd been using protein shakes from a company called Arbonne, and she was one of their consultants. Without giving it a second thought, Kiara paid $300 for a starter pack, and within weeks, she was losing weight. And that's when the consultant asked her the question.
Hey, you've had incredible success. Have you ever thought about becoming a consultant?
Kiara was skeptical, but every time she put in a new order, this woman would pester her. Are you sure you don't also want to sell this stuff? Then she told Kiara, listen, if you become a consultant, then you get a big discount on the products.
You're telling me that I can get my products that I love half off? Like, heck yeah.
And just like that, Kiara joined the MLM. In a lot of MLMs, the big money isn't in selling the product. It's in getting other people to sell it. Because when you recruit someone, then you get a portion of their sales. And if they recruit someone else, then you get a chunk of that too, and so on and so on. So Kiara set out to recruit as many people as she could.
It was almost as if any person that was walking, I would just be like, oh, it's a money sign. Like very quickly, it became about who else can I help detox? Who else can I help get on my team? Who else can I sign up?
She worked 12 to 14 hour days, responding to dozens of messages, constantly promoting the products on social media, and giving pep talks to her recruits. It seemed like everything was paying off. At the very height of her success, Kiara says she had 300 people under her and was making six figures.
I was number two in the entire company for promotions.
So you're a big deal.
Yeah, not to toot my own horn, but yeah.
But here's the thing. That is not the norm. One study shows that almost 75% of people who join MLMs end up losing or making no money at all. Kiara was a good salesperson, but when she joined, practically no one in her community had heard of the company. The market was wide open. But the later you join, the smaller the pool of potential recruits and the harder it is to make money. In Kiara's case, this hustle came at the cost of her mental health. She was working 24/7, always glued to her phone and having constant panic attacks as she tried to hit her numbers each month. She'd miss out on birthdays and family dinners. It wasn't until 2 years in, when her boyfriend got really sick and needed to go to the hospital, that she took a step back.
I remember at that moment, I told myself, I will not do a call. I will not do a single text message until I know that he's okay.
Was that the longest break you had taken from work?
Yep. That was one of the turning points where I kind of told myself, like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore.
Many MLMs make the promise that if you work hard enough, you'll have the kind of freedom and money you've always dreamed of. But Kiara felt stuck in this hamster wheel. And once she took a closer look at her recruits' sales and compared them to hers, she noticed a huge discrepancy.
I was the only person that was reaping the success, and nobody else was.
According to Arbonne's website, in 2019, a typical consultant earned between $120 to $502 in earnings and commissions. Between $120 and $502 a year. Remember, Kiara says she was making six figures. We reached out to Arbonne for comment, by the way, but didn't hear back. MLMs are built to feel like you're part of something larger, like you're one big family. So when top sellers leave, it's typical for them to get shunned. Kiara braced for that possibility when she got on a Zoom call and told her team.
I have a tug in my heart that it's time to, you know, start a next chapter and do something different. And I remember when I was saying these things, I saw their cameras just like turn off one by one. And when I saw that, my heart just started to drop.
Just like she feared, most everyone on her team stopped talking to her.
I think it took me about 6 months to adjust to the real life that I entered, the real world.
Since she quit, Kiara enrolled in school to become an interior designer, and she's put her MLM days behind her for good. I'm Rima Khreis for Marketplace.
If you want to learn more about MLMs and maybe get a deeper dive into Kiara's experiences, you can do that on the full episode of the This Is Uncomfortable podcast. This final note on the way out today, the last observation, I think, on this topic from us. Kimberly Clark reported quarterly profits this morning, made plenty of money. That's not the issue. The issue is they didn't make as much money as everybody had been guessing they would. Can you guess why? Would it help if I remind you that they make, among many other personal care products, Cottonelle toilet paper? Sales in the company's consumer tissue line off 14% last quarter because we have all come to our senses and stopped hoarding toilet paper. Last time we'll mention that, I promise. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context. Just because there has been all this talk of Bitcoin going mainstream of late, I'll point out that it's been a tough week for the granddaddy of cryptocurrencies. After a really strong spring and a high above $64,000 per Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency traded today as low as $48,000. Still a lot, but obviously way down. Here is my personal metric. Would I like my paycheck in dollars or in magic cyber money? I don't know. No, I do know. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.